How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, April 26, 2011, here at figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. It is the day after the draft. We were recording this prior to the supplemental draft. And quite frankly, for all we know, Cena could go back and forth at least two more times during that supplemental draft.
Nah, no more.
They should do at least two more times, just for comedy purposes.
Yeah.
Cena's all about comedy anyway, when he's supposed to be serious, so just draft him back at 9 a.m., and then at 9:30 a.m., put him back on Raw, and then everything's great.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the story of Raw.
It was interesting, because you know they actually were considering putting Cena on SmackDown.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was the whole thing, and I think that the thing that probably was the deciding point, because at one point, you know, the argument was, you know, Randy Orton's strong enough to carry Raw on his own as the top babyface, so Cena could go to SmackDown, which would shock everyone. But, you know, it was like, okay, what are we going to do for SummerSlam? And we got to get, you know, whoever the guys on SummerSlam are, you know, on the plan for SummerSlam, which was as originally Cena and Del Rio, and I presume is still Cena and Del Rio, and that's probably why they ended up on the same side. But what we have now, and of course, again, you know, I don't want to dwell so much on it, but it's like what everyone wants to talk about right now, because until the thing is done tomorrow, we really don't know how it shakes out. But, you know, figuring that all the big star moves have already been made, the SmackDown, you know, SmackDown babyface side isn't so bad anymore, but the heel side's atrocious.
Well, I think they'll draft some other guys over, but I think that I would be really surprised if, like, major changes they made on Raw were made on the internet on Tuesday.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, there could be, you know, I'm trying to think, like, who. I mean, the biggest thing, and I would almost expect it. I don't want to say expect it. That's too strong of a word. I mean, like the idea of Punk going over there would maybe balance things out. I mean, but it looks like on their what's their heel side really? I mean, I guess you still got Wade Barrett, you know, but Wade Barrett's kind of been marginalized. And then you've got Cody Rhodes, who is looking like he's gonna, you know, be, you know, pushed pretty hard, but I don't know about him as, like, you know, a top heel. And then you got Mark Henry, who, you know, every few years they give him that push, and usually what happens is they give him that push, they build up to a big pay-per-view match, the pay-per-view match, you know, sucks, and then he's back to where he was. And this is like the, you know, fourth or fifth incarnation of that one, where, you know, they you know, Mark Henry turned on Christian and John Cena, even though John Cena is actually on a different brand than Mark Henry right now, so they could do, I suppose, Christian and Mark Henry, but God, as a main event, as good as Christian is, God damn, that's scary.
Let's talk about this show. Very newsworthy. I will say this: they had, I mean, we mentioned this last night. They had 2 hours to push a pay per view on Sunday, a draft, which is normally a 3 hour show, and Rock making his big return next week for his birthday party,
and a Jim Ross Michael Cole angle,
and suffice to say, the
they got it all done.
Well, they got it all done, but when this show was over, I swear to God, I could not think of a single solitary reason anyone on earth would buy this pay per view.
The intrigue of to see if. Actually, I don't know.
Yes.
I guess
I'm waiting.
Alberto Del Rio winning the world title, so then Raw gets both belts.
They didn't even push that, though.
No, you know what? It was never mentioned, was it?
No.
Oh, well. Anyway,
we'll
so
talk
much
about
for
it.
That.
We'll talk about it. All right, so it opened up, since there was so much stuff they had to do, it opened up in action with a battle royal with a bunch of geeks from both sides and the...
I hate shirt battle royals.
Yep. Winning.
T-shirt battle royals are the worst because I don't know what it is, but it's like you, when you watch it, it's like everyone looks like a they should be in a dark match.
I think we ranted about this last year, if I recall correctly. All I know is that if you're doing a show and you've got a limited amount of time, which they did here, and you've got a bunch of singles matches that are all going like 2 minutes, why would you have a geek battle royal that nobody cares about that has to go all the way through a commercial break? What a complete waste of time this was. So
I think that they just they had so many guys, and I think they didn't want it to be one of those things where everyone goes out all at once. They wanted to build a little bit of intrigue and have a decent match. So they gave it, what was it? I have it right in front of me. They gave it, my God, they gave it 11 minutes.
Yeah, way too much time.
Wow.
Fine for a three-hour show, but a two-hour show was just yawn-inducing and a time waster, and other things had to be rushed on the show.
Well, anyway. A lot of stuff did go long. The Ron Killings interview went way long. I know that, but the
strongly disagree.
What?
Well, I mean, maybe as far as
time. Timing wise, it went 2 minutes over.
Okay.
I'm not saying it went too long for what accomplishing something. I'm just saying how it was timed.
I see.
But I didn't think the Battle Royal dragged or anything. I thought it was the visual of those guys with the shirts, kind of meant nothing to me. But the eliminations were paced well and. They had interesting guys there, and it was all right. It was all right. Big Show and Kofi won.
Came down to Big Show and Kofi against Mason Ryan and Evan Bourne from Raw.
Okay, Mason Ryan, like even in a battle royal when you can hide someone, he was not hidden.
No,
I mean like before, like there were faraway shots, and the first thing I'm looking at is like there's a guy in here who doesn't know how to wrestle, and then. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's Mason Ryan. And then the rest of the match, I was noticing that he didn't know how to wrestle.
So he was the last guy representing Raw, of course. And two guys from SmackDown, Kofi booted him, Show shoved him over the top to win. So SmackDown got a draft pick, and they announced that John Cena was heading to SmackDown. And everybody cheered. The locker room freaked out. Cole freaked out. Cena came out. A very, very positive reaction, and my conclusion is that the women and children were happy to see him, and the guys were happy they'd never have to see him on Raw again. And then they got real sad later. Getting ahead of ourselves here. So he put on a SmackDown shirt, and
You know what the giveaway to me was? I think it was in the main event when they did the six-man tag main event, and Josh Matthews said. John Cena will never, this is John Cena's final appearance ever on Raw. And I was just like, look, even if he was, because it's like, even if he's going on to SmackDown, I mean, he's still going to be on Raw 20 times out of the next 52 weeks. So, yeah, but whatever.
My conclusion, actually, after he put on the SmackDown shirt was that later they were going to announce that SmackDown had been drafted to Mondays.
You know what's funny is somebody called me up, right after the Orton pick. And just and said that exact same thing.
How about
and
that?
And called me up and just, it wasn't someone in the company or anything. It was one of my friends and just goes, what do you make of that? And I go, well, either Cena or Orton is going to be traded or somehow they're going back by the end of the show because Cena and Orton are not going to, both end up on SmackDown. It's just not going to happen. He goes, how about the idea that they change the names and SmackDown becomes the Monday show and Raw becomes the Friday show? And at the end, there's a draft. Somehow, the final draft is that they draft the days. And I go, I didn't think that was happening. But it was just interesting that you would say that when someone else brought that up to me this afternoon, today.
So, Todd interviewed Cena after the break, and he did a bunch of goofy comedy. And he did put over, it was a big deal that he was going to SmackDown, which was funny in hindsight. Claimed he'd be the champion after Extreme Rules, take the belt to SmackDown, and Miz walked up and said that wasn't going to happen and said, after Sunday, you're going to be right. I can't see you. Because, of course, he's leaving. Replayed the truth thing from last week, and then he came out and no music. They didn't want the sing-along with... I thought they should have had him come out with his old song that they tried to get over and failed. Could be his new song now. So, anyway, he did a long promo, and goddamn did I think Truth was awesome here. I thought... This was the interview of his life, and
he was good. But I think that I'm wondering if he was given. I guess maybe he was given dispensation to do all that swearing.
Well, I sure hope so. Otherwise, he's in trouble.
They bleeped him. He seemed a little discombobulated at the what stuff.
Yeah, but he went with it.
Yeah,
obviously, it wasn't scripted.
Can you imagine
obviously.
It's been 11 years and people still do that? It's so annoying.
Well. Some things are going to be done probably for all times. Did you notice on Tough Enough, by the way, that when Bret the Hitman Hart said the word wrestler, they bleeped it off the show?
Yes, I sure did.
That was something else.
That was especially because on that show, that's Shad Media, and as much as WWE, and there are terms they've been fighting over terms. Like, WWE didn't want, like, the term territories on. Independence.
Indies.
Independence. Like, you were wrestling in Independence. They didn't want that, but the Shad Media, like, they had to do compromises. And I guess the compromises is that we'll edit out Bret Hart saying wrestlers, but, you know, you're going to give us Independence.
I think the compromise something like, if you are a WWE employee right now, you cannot use these terms, but if you're one of the guys on the show that was hired by Shad to do the show, one of the contestants, you could pretty much say those words.
Yes, that's actually you're right. That's
so,
actually what it
so
was.
So Booker and Trish and Brett, they're not allowed to say wrestler, for example, but the contestants are welcome to say, I want to be the best wrestler in WWE.
Yeah.
Until they show up on Raw, of course. Then,
so Austin's never said that? Because I haven't really been paying, you know, I mean, I paid attention, but I haven't thought about, like, because Austin pretty much, I know his vernacular, and he certainly uses the term wrestler all the time in real-life speech.
Well, it depends on who hired him for the event, or for the show.
He was hired by Shad Media.
I mean, probably he can say whatever he wants.
Yeah. But I think they all were. I mean, Booker was, and Trish was as well.
Well, I don't know if, I guess so. So, huh. I guess, well, we'll see. Brett.
Well,
Brett,
okay, so maybe, but the wrestlers who were sent there, Brett was sent there by WWE, like Big Show. And they were the current active wrestler, so maybe you're right on
those
that.
Those guys would be out.
And Stacy Keibler was sent there by, not through WWE, she was booked through the Shed Media. Mm-hmm. So maybe she's allowed to say wrestler. Although she probably never did, because why would she?
So Truth is doing his big deal, and I loved it. But then, unfortunately, out came Morrison, who beat him up. And he beat him up, and he beat him up, and security broke it up. And then he broke free and beat him up some more and beat him up. And I just thought, man, that Truth is going to lay a whooping on Morrison before this show's over. And he never did.
Yeah. It was interesting because it's like, I really did think at that moment, well, now they're going to make it a four-way. And I don't think that they are, being that the TV show ended and they never even hinted at it.
Boy, did they downplay Morrison after that as well.
Yeah,
he's just a guy in a match.
Yeah, the other thing on that was I thought that Morrison's beating of him was like he didn't come across. I don't know. It didn't click with me. It's like he was trying, but it was like he was a guy. I felt in his beatdown he was a guy playing, let's do pro wrestling beatdown, as opposed to a guy doing a beatdown.
Sure. So then we had the announcement of Rock coming next week. We have the announcement that Kong...
The biggest birthday party in the history of television, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Kong is officially Karma, so there you go. And then we had Layla and Eve for a draft pick. And Michelle came down to do commentary, and... The match only went like a minute, but about 30 seconds in, Cole starts ranting and raving, and the camera focuses on him and pretty much misses Eve rolling up Layla for the pin. Didn't even get the finish on TV.
It kind of did.
Eve was pissed, Layla was pissed, Michelle was pissed. I figure this has to be some sort of rib on the girls. I
will say this. When I saw this, I thought that they had to be building towards Eve and Cole, but they really, I mean, unless it's a slow build, it's not like Eve should have done more afterwards to show that she was pissed. But they have to blow up this first feud. I mean, there's no point in confusing the feuds right now, but maybe that's going to build to something and use that as a way to get Eve over, you know, cause none of the women are over, and perhaps using Michael Cole as, you know, a heel in a battle of the sexes that you can get some, you know, a little bit of them behind those women. But, God, the other thing was, is even, again, I mean, granted, they only had a couple seconds, but the minute that match started, I mean, it was really clear that, like, and this was a hot crowd, and they died the minute this match started. So it's like the women are, right now, they're pretty dead.
I wonder why, because Cole buries them every time they come out there.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that there's not a reason.
Cole is turning the women's division into NXT.
Yeah, kind of.
And I thought it would at least make sense if, like, you were going to build during the Lawler feud to Cole becoming the intergender champion, but she's not even the champion anymore. They're just going to have a match? I don't even care at this point.
I mean, they could still do it. You know, who knows? Maybe they're not doing it at all, and we're just thinking, you know, in a direction that they're not even thinking.
We're thinking logically because he does it every time Eve is in the ring and no one else?
Yeah, it could be just that they're thinking that the women's match is like the bathroom break, and so we'll just do it. Like, you know, like in WCW when they would always do that during the cruiserweight match, but it isn't like the cruiserweights ever then wrestled Hulk Hogan.
We had JR warming up backstage. Oh, by the way, after the match, we had Layla beating the shit out of Michelle, just beat the crap out of her, and then breaking down in hysterics, at which point we got our draft pick, and Rey Mysterio is heading to Raw, which, of course, made it pretty clear at the end of the show that Sin Cara was moving to SmackDown, which is, in fact, what happened, which is, in fact, also the right move.
Absolutely, yeah. We had predictable, but it is also a sign that, you know, that it is the first sign of Vince losing confidence in Sin Cara.
Yeah, I guess, but, I mean, even if I were going to push him as a very, very top star, I'd still have him on SmackDown.
Yeah, well, I know it's better because he can be edited and everything.
We had Cody doing a promo saying that now that he and Ray were on different brands, he was going to give him a go.
You know what, though? They should have all the women on. They should, like, have women exclusive on SmackDown.
That would be fine.
For that very reason.
That would be fine. Had anyway, he's going to give a going away present, which was a new mask, the kind you get in a hospital when someone breaks your face. Which actually was a mask that Cole may need, based on the deal with Ross later. Sheamus and Kofi for a draft pick. Kofi got the pin, two of his Trouble in Paradise kicks. Went about 2 minutes, it was fine.
Well, Kofi pinned Sheamus, right?
Kofi, yes, pinned Sheamus.
Yeah.
So SmackDown got another draft pick. It was Randy Orton. So pretty clear at this point that something was going to happen with either Orton or Cena, because they weren't both going to the same brand. Orton came out smiling, sporting a beard, got his shirt. Maybe I'm reading too much into his reaction, but he didn't look happy with that shirt after they threw it at him, so who knows?
I would think, again, not knowing this because I haven't talked to anyone, but I would think that John Cena and Randy Orton both knew ahead of time where this was going. I would guess that nobody else
I would think
did.
Cena, for sure.
Yeah.
And probably Orton.
I think Orton probably. And you know what? Even if he didn't drive into the building, if he actually thought about business, which he probably does, he probably should have figured it out anyway. That there was, you know, a 70% chance that that's where he was ending up. He probably should have had that kind of figured out all week that, you know, even if they didn't tell him. But I would just think that because of who those two guys are, that those two guys might have gotten a tip-off.
You know, when we got word last night that they were considering moving Cena to SmackDown because of the idea that they felt that Orton might be strong enough to carry Raw, my first thought, I swear to God, was think again.
My first thought was, is like, oh, what about the SummerSlam idea? Because, you know. But
I presume they thought again.
Well, yeah, they did.
I mean, obviously they did
a swerve. They actually made two picks, like, meaningless, but.
Yeah.
If it was up to me, I would keep Cena on Raw. Cena's the guy who's going to be going against Rock. Cena's going to be the top star in the company.
That was another giveaway, by the way. When they kept announcing that Rock is showing up next week for his birthday party, and it's like, okay, so hold on a second. So Rock is coming to Raw next week, and Cena is going to be on SmackDown? I find that impossible to believe.
Well, they did say that everyone from Raw and SmackDown's been invited to his birthday party.
I see. I missed that part.
So he can still, you know, Cena could still, like, put the cake in his face.
I see. All right, so then we had the Cole-Ross match. Yes. Free on Raw with an hour build, Jim Ross versus Michael Cole. Straight out of TNA, this was.
Not only that, but when this was over, it was like, I swear, like, if there was interest in that tag match, and I kind of sense that there might have been actually more interest in that tag match than the two title matches, I don't think that there would be any more now, because you've seen it now.
Well, I mean, not just that, but I mean, okay, so what happened was, they stalled forever, which was just insufferable, and then finally it gets down to action. Cole stomps on JR's hat, JR shoves him down, Cole tries to do a body slam, and Ross fell on top, which sounds like the kind of spot Vince McMahon would come up with. So Ross then passes to the full mount and pounds.
He landed in full mount.
Well, you know, he passed. He passed.
He did pass? Okay.
Yes, he was in side control, and he passed into the mount.
Okay.
But he pounded the shit out of Cole, and his fist went.
His hammer fist.
Yeah, he hammer fisted him, and his tooth went right into Ross's fist, and now Ross has to go into the doctor tomorrow because his hand's all swollen, and Cole's face is all busted up. And as this is happening, I'm just thinking, grown men would have paid paid to have seen Jim Ross punch out Michael Cole on pay-per-view, and you gave it away for free here on Raw. So, Ev Swagger hit the ring for the DQ. He puts Ross in the ankle lock. Cole is screaming, his lips all destroyed. So then, they're whipping Ross like a government mule with Ross's belt, and finally, in runs Lawler. He makes a save for Ross. He tosses Swagger outside. He whips Cole in the ass with the belt. And right then I just thought, what am I paying for Sunday? I mean, what am I paying for? I just saw Lawler beat up Swagger. I saw him strap Cole. I saw Lawler punch Cole in the face and give Cole a bloody face. You know,
Ross gave him the bloody face.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm paying to see some people get whipped?
Yes.
I've seen it all.
Because they changed to a country whipping match, so you're paying to see people get whipped with belts.
I saw that here. And I saw the heel get whipped with the belt. There's like nothing more for me to see here. I've seen it all.
Yeah. I would say that I had the emotion when it was over that I was less interested in seeing the pay-per-view because, you know, you really only, with Ross and Cole, I mean, you know, you're only getting one spot, okay? And I got my one spot.
They had two great things that would have been awesome on pay-per-view. One was when Jerry Lawler, thanks to Jim Ross, rolled up and pinned Jack Swagger, and the place just went nuts. And the other was when JR got his hands on Cole and punched him in the face and bloodied him up. I've seen both of those for free.
Yeah.
I mean, there's literally nothing left. I could not even believe this angle here. So there you go.
But, I and maybe I'll end up being wrong. I will bet that the quarter hour gains a lot of viewers.
Well, I'm sure it will. I mean, if that's your goal, then great.
I'm sure that's why they put it there. I just have this feeling that the quarter hour will gain a lot of viewers, and then tomorrow afternoon when they get those numbers, they'll go, see, it was a success.
Yeah, but you want to know what? If you're gonna play that game, then if they would have announced this match, say, last week, or they announced this match for Rock's birthday party, it would have been an even bigger quarter. But they didn't even do that. They announced it at the beginning of this show.
Well, I was surprised too, because I mean I just figured that they would announce and yell at each other for 2 hours, and quite frankly that would have been more effective, and maybe have Ross, like, you know, shake the coal mine and, you know, do stuff like that. Because yeah, I mean,
you know, I bet Lawler could have cut, or I'm sorry, Ross could have cut a hell of a promo saying, "I'm going to punch you. I'm going to put your tooth through my fist Sunday at the pay per view."
Yeah,
guarantee he could have, and instead he.
And nobody did a promo afterwards. Well, Cole kind of did some promos later, but nothing in a way that made you actually want to see the match.
No. So this was a disappointment. We had Miz doing a promo, and he said that people better hope he did not get drafted to SmackDown, because if he did, Raw would be canceled in a month. Guaranteed, he said.
Well, they've canceled NXT and Superstar, so that is something you could say.
Speaking of NXT.
Yes.
Randy Orton got in the ring, and I thought, is he facing someone from NXT? Who is that in the ring? And turns out it was Dolph Ziggler.
Conor O'Brien. I don't know.
It was Dolph Ziggler with his plain, short, brown haircut, looking like any other guy from Tough Enough. And match was good. Orton,
yeah,
actually...
3-minute RKO.
Yep, Orton...
He's technically a good wrestler, but you know what he reminded me of is Doug Basham in WWF.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a guy who's actually a technically good wrestler, who you just look at him and has this freaking, you take one look at him and you just think, bland.
That's what we got here.
Yeah.
So, RK out of nowhere. I will say that Randy Orton did, in fact, I believe he went into second gear in this match. And I can't remember the last time I remember seeing that, but he did that here. SmackDown, or RKO out of nowhere, and then afterwards they were about to do the draft picks when Punk came out and said, I'm going to send you packing to SmackDown on Sunday, a shell of your former self, and Norton promised to leave him unconscious on Sunday. So anyway, the draft picks ended up being SmackDown getting Sin Cara and Mark Henry. What a duo. And as noted, Sin Cara to the tape show. Can't be a bad thing. Wade Barrett and Rey Mysterio for two draft picks. Rey was fighting for Raw here since he'd been drafted. Clean pin, 619, big splash. Sucks to be the Intercontinental Champion. And Raw got Big Show and Alberto Del Rio. And then they cut backstage, and Alberto was pissed off. And he was ranting and raving in Spanish about what this meant for his title shot at the pay-per-view. And Brodus just wanted to know what this meant for him, and Alberto totally blew him off, so...
So I guess Ricardo goes with him, but Brodus stays on SmackDown.
How sad.
I would be sad if I was Brodus, because that could be a kiss of death.
I couldn't figure out what Alberto was pissed off about. It sounded like he's not getting his title shot now. You win the belt, you take the belt to Raw. What's the big deal?
Maybe he had a lot of friends on SmackDown. Maybe like the guys he traveled with were on SmackDown.
Maybe his cars weren't drafted?
I don't know about that, but maybe his, you know, this, who knows?
Alberto's.
Maybe he likes Teddy Long.
He doesn't have any friends. Come on. Well, Teddy Long was out for the next segment as the GM, so it doesn't matter. He said the main event.
But only for this week.
Well, yeah. Main event, six-man tag to determine the final draft. It was Miz, Punk, and Alberto against Henry, Christian, and Cena. Fun main event. Beat on Christian for a long time. He finally made the hot tag to Cena. He ran wild on Miz. Was setting up the five-knuckle shuffle when Mark Henry turned heel, hit the ring, laid him out with a lariat, and then press slammed Christian into the steps, stormed out, and Cena ended up eating the skull-crushing finale for the pin. So it was actually great for a moment there because, you know, I've said a lot about Miz never winning clean, but when Miz got the win here after Mark Henry beat up Cena, and then you had Miz, Del Rio, and Punk all celebrating like they'd actually accomplished something in this match, I thought they were awesome. And then,
Until
Cena gets drafted back to Raw, and he makes his own comeback. He beats up everyone. He lays out Miz. He hits the five-knuckle shuffle. He goes for the FU. Miz grabs rope, so Cena dumps him over on all the heels. All the bad guys fall down like dominoes. Cena's standing there celebrating, and again, I thought, what in God's name am I buying this pay-per-view for?
Well, Cena's not the champion, so he just shows that, you know, how strong he is, and you know, in theory, you're buying the pay-per-view to watch Cena win the championship. So that's okay.
For the 8,000th, I guess it's okay, but...
Well, the 8,000th time, it's whatever. You're going to get 8,000 more. It's not like Cena's going away from main events and title picture anytime soon.
That's unfortunately true. So there you go. I thought as a go-home show, it sucked. As a draft show, it was certainly more newsworthy than last year, that's for sure. And as, I don't know, that was it. That was Raw for you, everybody.
Yeah, well, I mean... Couple more, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens if, like, Beth Phoenix goes to Raw. You know, like, they for a time on Sunday, she was on the Raw roster for some reason, and then was changed back. But, I mean, there's going to be a bunch of mid-card movement. But, so you got Big Show kind of in the Cena Big Show, and Rey Mysterio is the top babyface on Raw now. With Morrison probably moving into the number four spot. And on the heel side, you got Miz, you got Del Rio.
Truth?
R-Truth. Who else is there? Mark Henry's on the SmackDown side. So, Dolph, not looking good.
Punk
not looking
for
good
now.
For Mr. Dolph.
Yeah.
And on the SmackDown, just... I don't know. It'll be interesting. Like there's the Drew McIntyre, Swagger, Cody Rhodes. Like, what's going to happen with some of those guys? I could see Jack Swagger going to Raw because it looks like they're going to do a Jack Swagger Jerry Lawler program.
That program is going to continue.
At least as of middle of last week, it was going to continue the house shows, some house shows, big market house shows.
About that.
I don't, you know, it could always change.
What do you think of Tough Enough this week?
It's all right. I mean, I got a kick out of the skating thing, but at the same time, the thing I was thinking about the skating thing was is if you had, like, all these WWE wrestlers on the roster now out there trying to skate, I can just imagine that probably half to two-thirds of them would look like complete klutzes. So exactly what were like we're going to learn based on who can skate?
Nothing.
Okay. I mean, it's like they're trying to like go like, you know, you have to have agility. Well, of course, but, you know, roller skating. I mean, roller skating is a nice thing to be able to do, but I don't know what it has anything to do with professional wrestling.
I love when they were talking about agility like it was like a singular drill.
Yeah.
We're going to learn agility today. You know, like you're going to learn a body slam. That was stupid. But I will say
How about that jumping up and down over the ropes thing back and forth? It was cool, but I don't know.
You know what I thought? I'll tell you what I thought when I watched that. I immediately turned to my wife and I said, when we have children, they've got to take gymnastics. I mean, I can't.
Why, you want to be wrestlers?
Well, no, but I mean, just in general life, I can't imagine. I've been a gymnast like
in
my entire life.
Okay. I'm not going to argue with you because I know a lot of people in their 20s that were wrestlers that told me that they wished that when they were younger they had taken gymnastics. But in real life, like, most guys don't do gymnastics.
Well, no, you know, I mean, it's not like.
I think guys roller skate.
I know, but I mean,
maybe not now.
If you're gonna do any athletic endeavor, just like GSP said on the show on Ultimate Fighter the other day.
Oh, come on. The gymnasts are the greatest athletes in the world. Screw that. They're not better athletes than
NBA players. I'm not going to have this argument, but I'm going to say this. When I see these geeks on Tough Enough, or really when you watch any other show where people are trying to learn a sport, and sometimes it's mind-boggling how completely uncoordinated these people are. And if they'd done, like, I'm not even saying you have to be a high-level gymnast. If you took, like, a year when you were a kid of an easy gymnastics class where they taught you how to roll forwards and backwards and do some cartwheels and do a handstand and stuff like that, you'd be so much better off learning sports throughout your life if you just had a little bit of coordination.
Well, wrestling, not I don't think it would. I mean, professional wrestling, but I don't know how it would, like, help you with football or amateur wrestling.
Amateur wrestling, your balance?
I guess. I mean, I goofed around with gymnastics. I mean, when I was in high school and first year of college, and I mean, I thought it was really, really cool because there were, you know, I thought it was cool because the guys could do things that I couldn't do. So I always, like, you know, impressed me.
Like, what happens if you're running down the football field and you get clipped? And one guy has learned how to do some rolls, and, you know, he can roll forward and he can roll backwards, and he can land somewhat safely.
I don't
safely.
Know too many football coaches that do gymnastics. Although there was a period, I remember a period when it was like, because Arnold Schwarzenegger did this, it's even in the movie Pumping Iron, where all the bodybuilders wanted to learn ballet because Arnold did it. And I thought it was kind of amusing, you know, because it was probably a rib by Arnold anyway.
But I'm just saying, you learn a little bit of coordination, and you're going to be safer on the football field than a guy that doesn't know how to do a forward roll, and he gets clipped, and he just lands on his face because he has no idea how to roll.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're a lineman and you learn wrestling, you also learn balance.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw these guys jumping up and down over the ropes, and some of them, I mean, they couldn't even come close to jumping up and down over these ropes. And I was just like, really? You can't jump? You can't hurdle over these ropes? What is wrong with you?
Well, you know what? If you did track and you did the hurdles... Because you know, I think that's pretty. Because I think doing the hurdles is really good for coordination.
Sure.
You know, because if you do the hurdles, it teaches you to jump while you're running at full speed. And I mean, especially like for football or something. I don't know. It might help you for leapfrogs with wrestling. I think hurdlers and you know, I mean, some of the best. I'll tell you another one is because I've noticed a lot of people who ended up being really good pro wrestlers, especially the best dropkick guys. Were high jumpers when they were in high school. Like Jim Brunzell was a high jumper. Skip Young was a great high jumper. You know, and he was one of the best dropkick guys I ever saw. Brian Pillman did some high jump, and Jack Briscoe was like a state champion in the high jump, and he was one of the best dropkick guys I ever saw. Also, so I think the high jump is an interesting one, and that's a total coordination plus leaping ability sport. So what we should do is have this manual for everyone who wants to do pro wrestling. They should do the high jump, they should do gymnastics, they should do amateur wrestling, and they should do theater.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Any sport that actually involves a little bit of athletic ability, they should do. I don't even care what sport it is, to be honest with you. I obviously would argue you should do some wrestling and some gymnastics, but, you know.
I think the high jumping and hurdling, not so much. I think hurdling would be really good for if you were a football player.
Yeah.
But high jump, you know. I mean, there's no question that the ability to jump really high helps you in wrestling because the guys who can jump really high, they kind of make people ooh when they do the jumps, and they kind of stand out a little bit, you know, rather than the guys who, you know, it gives you something that you can do that you know, people notice and go, hey, he's like a real athlete. You know, kind of like what they were looking for in the show when these guys were going through their spots. They wanted to see, you know, who's a klutz and who's athletic.
Well, they found a whole shitload of klutzes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Rima is gone.
Yeah.
Just not an athlete. Just wasn't picking up the wrestling. They were nice about it. I mean, you know, they cut her and all, but you know, Austin.
You know what I liked about that is at the end, I saw it so many times on the other Tough Enough, where a guy would go in there and, like, you know, who you know, you could tell, like, maybe they watched wrestling on TV, but they really didn't have a clue what it was, okay? And then they go and do Tough Enough, and they're, I love wrestling. This is going to be my life. And they get cut, and it's like, don't worry, you'll see me in WWE again. And, like, not one of them ever did any indies again, nor did we ever see him again. And Rima is going to fall in that. We will, you know. I mean, if she wants to do WWE, don't get me wrong, they'll figure out a way to get her on there. But, you know, in all of her interviews that she's done with newspapers on what she's going to do with her career, you know, she talks about being an actress. You know, she doesn't talk about doing WWE. So it's like, I'm gonna do this. Like, it's like, yeah, you're gonna go and do indies, you know. So
doubtful.
Yeah.
I do think that they're doing a pretty good job with character development on this show.
Much better than Ultimate Fight. I mean, Ultimate Fighter.
It's not just a bunch of faceless people you cannot identify.
I know everybody's. I know pretty much everyone now.
Yeah, you may not be able to rattle off everybody's names, but you certainly can look at everybody and know who they are, what their deal is, if they're good, if they're bad, if they're a geek, if they're talented. And
AJ Kirsch, who's the guy from Mill Valley out here, like, I've seen him on the show, but I don't really, like, I don't have a feel for him at all. Whereas what's the guy? The J, the MMA fighter that was also from out here at one point. I know completely him, you know.
Sure. And Luke.
Well, Luke is like the star, and then what's his name, Martin? Who won the competition. It was interesting that you know, Luke has got, like, the one thing that they've shown with Luke is that he's got a really big ego, but he's also the best guy there. And that, forgetting the guy's name, but the other...
I forget his name, too, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the
MMA guy.
The MMA guy, who was, you know, I think it's funny because, like they think that he's, like, completely green, but he actually trained, like, with Dutch Mantel for months before that show started. And the only reason he had never done indies was because he kept winning his MMA fights, and he didn't want to give up MMA while he was still winning. I mean, so...
I thought it was funny when he was doing good hurdles, and they were like, can't believe this guy is an athlete. It's like, really? He's an MMA fighter. What are you trying to say here? So that was fascinating. But yes, they're doing a... And you know what? Going into this show, I really thought
Jeremiah
I was going to...
Jeremiah Riggs.
Jeremiah, that's right. Going into this show, I really thought I was going to hate Bill DeMott, and I don't. I mean, certainly, I would not go to him for training. But you know, he comes off as he's a
what personable. He should come off as, I guess. I don't even know how to describe it, but I thought the stuff with him and Rima when they were doing the late night sessions and everything, I thought that, you know, he was trying to be like a real coach and trying his darndest to teach her, you know, as much as he could, but it just, you know, she just wasn't getting. I did sense from watching her, though, that she didn't have a natural inclination. You know, like some guys, like, you know, because again, by this point of what we see, we're 4 weeks in, okay, and considering this, you know, and again, this is a very extreme example, but Kurt Angle's first pro wrestling training was on a Monday, his first pro wrestling match was on a Friday, and he was actually, like, kind of good in that match. And so she's had a month, and, like, she's still, like, really, like the most basics of stuff that I think a good athlete would pick up on, she still was, like, not there at all.
Well, that also speaks to her probably not being that big a fan before this whole thing started.
She was a fan. I mean, she went, yeah. You know, I mean, I don't think it's so much a fan as much as, you know, she just couldn't let her body relax to bump.
But there's a different level of fandom. There's a fandom where, like, you watch it and it's kind of cool and you think it would be neat. And there's the kind of fan where you actually watch it close enough where if your friend on the street told you to do a snapmare and you'd never done one in your life, you probably could pull it off on your first attempt.
Yeah, probably. And she couldn't.
No.
But maybe she's, you know what? I mean, maybe she's, you know, she's a pretty girl, but maybe she's not a good athlete.
Well, I mean, I think that was clear.
Yeah.
That's why she was cut.
She danced all right, though.
Well, yeah, but I don't know how much athletic ability is involved in swiveling your hips.
don't know.
Dancing with the Stars. What's up with Jericho?
Man, dude's in grave danger. He finished in last place tonight, and he has not done well in the voting. He's done better each week in the voting, but he's not done well in the voting. It will take a lot of votes to save him. I mean, he's not dead, but I mean, if you were going to predict, he would be the heavy favorite to be eliminated tomorrow. So and he took what, second or tied for second last week. So I didn't, he didn't do well this week.
We got big UFC news we haven't even talked about till just now. John Jones has a ligament issue in his hand that he's actually had for a long time, and he's been trying to gut through it, but essentially he needs to get surgery. And he fought kicking and screaming, but he's going to get the surgery. And no timetable for his return. Obviously, they're hoping for it to be sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, Rashad Evans is, in fact, going to take another fight in the meantime. So the Jones versus Rashad fight scheduled for August is off. And I was shocked when I heard that Rashad was actually going to fight in the interim, since he'd taken
it's been so long, he just needed to fight.
Yeah.
It was his own. I mean, I'm sure that they pressured him, but he absolutely made the call. And as far as, like, Phil Davis,
who is his opponent, by the way.
Yeah. Kind of got the lowdown on it. You know, it's the basic gist is, as far as different opponents, Shogun is supposed to, and Forrest Griffin were supposed to fight each other in Brazil, and they didn't want to take Shogun off the Brazil show or Forrest. And also, the other thing was is that the person who Evans fought, because Evans' fight with Davis, the winner is fighting John Jones for the championship. So, Evans is risking his number one contendership, and if Davis wins, he's getting the title shot. So they needed a guy who they could viably put against Jones. And I believe that the feeling was that Shogun, which I think is a guy that a lot of people thought would like to see Rashad face, only because they've never faced each other and they're two top contenders and everything. And, I'd like to see the fight myself. But their feeling was that if Shogun were to beat Rashad, you put Shogun against John Jones, and it's like, who would want to see it? We already know what happens there. And Jones is only getting better, and Shogun's probably not getting better. So I think that was the idea that, putting Shogun in that match makes no sense when you look at it that way, and it doesn't. So the other one, and, my argument, if it was me, I would go with Machida. If Machida beats Couture, I would basically not announce nothing and then wait until Saturday night, and whatever happens Saturday night, if Machida wins, by knockout, wins strong, you can, it's a big win over, Randy Couture, who's a legend, and you could put him against Evans. Plus, Evans beating him would solidify Evans as the top contender, because Machida's the only guy ever to beat Evans, so it's a good rematch. And then the other one is that if Machida were to beat Evans a second time, okay, Machida did lose to Quentin Jackson, but in reality, he was the better fighter than Quentin, even though he cost himself the match by not being aggressive. But it was a close fight. He was knocked out by Shogun, but the thing is he would come off straight wins over Couture and Evans. And also, I think there's a very strong argument that Machida may be John Jones' most difficult opponent, just because, his unorthodox style, and he might give him fits. So, but anyway, that's not the decision that was made. The decision that was made is to go with Rashad Evans and Phil Davis. And, the argument is Phil Davis is undefeated. If Phil Davis were to beat Rashad, he would have beaten Nogueira and Rashad in a row. And you get a new guy in the championship mix. But, that's how it's going to go. I mean, I wasn't like a big fan of Phil Davis as a contender coming off the Nogueira fight. I thought, he won the fight, but he didn't look all that, he almost like lost by winning to me. If he beats Evans, people will forget about the Nogueira fight anyway. So that's the deal. But this is one, right now when we're looking at everything, Brock Lesnar loses to Junior Dos Santos. You know, there's no way in hell that they're doing the business that they did last year on pay-per-view. I mean, if Brock wins, yeah, Brock and Kane would be a big fight. Dos Santos and Kane will not be nearly as big. And, you know, Rashad Evans, I thought Rashad Evans and John Jones, because of the dynamic, probably would have ended up doing real good numbers. But Rashad Evans and Phil Davis, boy, you know, that show probably won't bomb because you've got, you know, Vitor and Akiyama. That's not really I don't know if that's going to really help. And then you've got, what's the other one? Rich Franklin and, who's Rich Franklin fighting? Now, I should know this off if they just announced it. Hold on.
I have forgotten as well, shockingly.
Okay, well, I have all this stuff written down.
So you can find it first.
All right.
Rich Franklin.
Nogueira. You know what? You know, after the last couple of Nogueira fights, I'll tell you what, they're going to have a tough time in Philadelphia selling tickets. Because Philadelphia, like, they sold out the first UFC in town, but this is the second one. And I think Philadelphia is going to be a very picky city when it comes to UFC. I don't sense that, like, Philadelphia is one of these markets that's, you know, going to run in and sell out every time out. And I think this card is, you know, because Evans, I don't, you know, Evans has had some very good buy rates, some excellent buy rates, but it's always I don't think that Evans himself is a big draw as much as Evans is a great adversary, and for someone who people really like, he's tremendous. If people really like his opponent, I think Evans is just great. But Phil Davis, you know, people don't really know him, so I think that's that's. I don't see that as a big box office show by any means.
So some of the questions before we wrap it up here today. We've got a bunch of them. You can always send these to mailbag@wrestlingobserver.com. This person here says, first, let's see here. Does Vince McMahon not like storylines where it gets too real for the fans? The Brett versus Vince and Cole versus Lawler storylines were both instances where human emotion was involved and it got turned into a clown show. Do you think this is coincidence or on purpose?
On purpose. I think that they only know, I think they don't know when to leave well enough alone. And I think that this, and it's not the first time. The thing with WWE that I've noticed is that when they are handed an angle, although Cole and Lawler was their own angle. I mean, Bret and Vince was in a weird sense their own angle, but it wasn't their scripted angle. It just was something turned up. But I think they only know one way to do it, and the angles that you mentioned were ones that leaving, you know, just doing old basic would be significantly better than too many, you know, goofing around with it. And but I think that they just only know that, you know, that one way to go. So. Yeah, I mean, it's not on purpose to ruin it, but it does ruin, it does take the edge off for sure. And it's because of the nature of how they perceive their television and what their role on television and the writers as well. Because again, how many of the writers think about this, how many of the writers that are writing WWE right now have ever seen an angle? You know, like I'd throw out like a Bruno Zabisco, you know, or Randy Savage, Jerry Lawler, you know, which is actually the perfect example of you know, something real that you turn into an angle and then make big money with, you know, like Savage Lawler was one where you couldn't do your typical pro wrestling angle because by doing it there would be no money to be made. You have to do it a certain way to keep the reality in, you know, the context of the reality and on the angle, and that's what made the angle made it so successful. And certain angles, like Bret Hart and Vince, was the perfect example of that. That the minute you made that a pro wrestling angle, then it was what did it matter, you know? But you know, I mean, that, you know, I mean, I guess you know, I just remember when that angle went through, it was like so obvious what to do, and it's funny because it's not as if, you know, I mean, Bret had his idea of what to do, and they agreed on it, and I know where it was going, and then they added a couple of twists. And each twist made it, you know, not work. And then at the end, you know, there's Vince on that conference call, you know, after the buy rate came in, going like, you know, people are going to have this excuse and this excuse and this excuse, but I presented a card that, he didn't say I presented a card people didn't want to see. That was the Paul Bosch thing, because at the end of the day, it's the attraction. Our attraction didn't connect with our paying audience. We didn't deliver what our audience wanted to see. It's like, you had a match that people probably wanted to see, but you didn't deliver the creative because you didn't know that, like, you know, every match has a certain thing that would make it peak in its own way, and I think that they don't know the variety. And you know, Vince, I would think Vince knows, but again, the writers are the ones who are doing that, and Vince is more okaying it, and Vince can tweak it and all that. But you know, again, like, how many of those writers have watched enough different angles that have drawn money that were based on reality? Everything that they've seen has been based, you know, like if you grew up watching WWE, you never had that angle. You know, you know, the closest one, you know, Hogan and Flair could have been, but it wasn't. You know, it really, you know, they didn't do that either. I mean, have they ever really done that? I mean, you know, Roddy Piper and Mr. T kind of had it, but by the time they did the second one, I don't think it had it anymore. And then the first Roddy Piper and Mr. T was a huge, you know, in the original WrestleMania was a giant success. But even that's 27 years ago, and I think a lot of the writers weren't even, you know, they were born or they were so young that they don't really understand that. Hogan and Savage, but that was all pro wrestling. I mean, it was brilliant pro wrestling. That's not the same thing as this.
This person here wants to know, what is the story behind the Junkyard Dog's brief stint in WCW in 1992?
I don't know what the question, you know, just he was there. You know, he was a big attraction, and you know, he had a lot of problems, but it's like anyone who drew money at one point in time will get many, many opportunities to fuck up in this business, because there's always a place for someone who once drew money, because the promoters will think, well, he did once, so he can do it again. And, you know, Junkyard Dog had great promo ability and great charisma, and but he'd gotten so out of shape that, you know, I don't know, just didn't, you know, there was very limited what you could do with him.
One more here. My friend and I were debating this. I'd like your opinion. Would AJ Styles be more over than Daniel Bryan in WWE, and how over would he be at the start? And is there any hope he would leave the circus known as TNA?
Well, I'm sure he's under a long-term contract. And if I was AJ Styles, I wouldn't make that move. Unless WWE came and, I mean, if they offered him like a huge downside guarantee, guaranteed money, okay, then I would go. Okay. But if they brought him in and just go, you know, like, you know, it's too much of a risk if you're AJ Styles, because number one, you know, the other guys created you and they're going to want to change your name and they're, you know, your style, they're going to try to immediately prove that you're not as good as people think you are. And it's like, and you're small, you know, so if I was, and AJ Styles is a star in TNA, they like him, you know, he's one of their few homegrown guys that they kind of made into a star. So unless, like, if WWE came in and just goes, look, we're going to offer you $750,000 downside guarantee, we think you're what we want, that money alone would say, okay, they're going to push me. Then I would go. But if they go in there and just go, well, you know, we're not going to offer you much, but you have opportunity, I'd say screw it, you know. I mean, as far as, like, could he be bigger than Daniel Bryan or whatever, that's 100% up to the push. He could be way bigger. He could be not as big. You know, they could go in there and just go, you know, he doesn't know how to work and bury him 6 feet under. Or they could go, wow, this guy's just a great, great athlete. He's just got some awesome gifts. And, you know, but, I mean, Evan Bourne's a great athlete. I mean, he's smaller than AJ, but he also got over and they still didn't really, you know, push him. So, yeah, you know, I mean, Daniel Bryan, if they had pushed him, you know, in a different way, he could be a top babyface right now. But, you know, the thing that I think killed him was the Gail Kim and the Bella stuff. For whatever reason, I mean, I'm, you know, his reaction at the house shows, like when they started doing that angle, that's when it all tapered off. It wasn't the right angle. It didn't click, you know. So,
well, he became a sports entertainer. Who wants to see that?
For him, yeah. I mean, they, you know, he had to be something, and they only knew, you know. Again, we've got, you know, I think their feeling was that we've got to put a wig on him because he's too serious. And it's like, some guys are better off serious. Some guys aren't. You know, it's like me going out there. If I had, like, Santino Marella is a perfect example, and I was, like, some promoter, you know, who you know, had the feeling, you know, oh, I want wrestling to be serious, so I'm going to make Santino Marella and tell him, you know, or Honky Tonk Man, and just go, I'm going to bring that guy in and just go, no comedy. I want you to go out there, and I want you to do chain wrestling, and I want you to be damn serious. And it's like, what the fuck? You can get a million guys who can do it better than them, right? I mean, if you're good, you know, some guys are better at comedy. Some guys are more effective at wrestling. And to try to make everyone both comedy and wrestling at the same time, you know, it's not the best use of different guys. You know, I mean, Santino had to take his lumps for a long time in booking because the wrestling people thought, well, you know, he's really funny, but he can't wrestle, so we can't let him win any matches. And it's like, you know what? He can win in prelims. He can do that goofy Cobra. That's cool. And he can beat, you know, Ted DiBiase or whoever these guys are. And they need guys like that. They need some guys who can lose to Santino Marella, you know, on television and, you know, in two-minute matches and get over the thing and let Santino do his funny interviews. And he's great. He's wonderful, you know. I mean, he shouldn't be beating the top guys. But at the same time with Daniel Bryan, it's like, yeah, he probably shouldn't be doing comedy. And, you know, the announcers probably shouldn't be calling attention to perceived shortcomings that aren't even really his shortcomings, because he clearly did get over. He does have some charisma. He can talk when he's given the right material. But, you know, they told people so long, he has no charisma. He has no charisma. And if you tell people that enough time, you know, people will start saying, you know what, he has no charisma, even the fact that even if he's over. And they'll say, he can't get over because he has no charisma. So it becomes like that self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like when they did you know, and they've done this with several people, you know, and Lance Storm was one of them. When they go out there and your gimmick is that you're boring, pretty soon if you tell people the guy's boring long enough, they're going to go, you know what? He's boring. It becomes a handicap after a while.
And that's going to do it for today, everybody. But we got a lot of stuff coming up. Tomorrow we're going to be joined on Figure Four Daily by Mike Quackenbush talking about the King of Trios a couple of weekends ago. All of the news in Chikara, so that should be a fun show. Brian and Vinny's show tomorrow night. And then starting on Wednesday, it's about 6 or 7 straight days of shows. We have Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, all from Toronto. Sunday night, we're back for Extreme Rules. Monday night, we're back for Raw. So, no shortage of radio content, plus all
Sunday,
the other stuff.
Sunday night, we're going to be freaking dead.
Don't remind me. Try not to
I mean, that's going to be, you know, I mean, what time are you leaving Sunday morning?
Like 9 a.m.?
Yeah.
So
well, 9 a.m. is 6. Not, think about it. You got to remember,
so
9 a.m. is
6
a.m., which
specific.
Means you're getting up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, it's going to suck.
After being up all night the night before, which means you're probably not going to sleep.
Yeah.
And then, okay, which is okay. I mean, I do that, you know, every couple of weeks on this, you know, on the UFC night anyway. But, and you know, and if it's Vegas, flying home and then watching the WWE pay-per-view or TNA pay-per-view, it's really, you know, it's... It isn't bad. It really isn't. I mean, I should never complain about it. It's, you know, it's tough, but so what? But yeah, this one when you're going, you know, this is going to be tough. That Extreme Rules show, and then you know, by Monday it'll be okay. But Sunday's going to be a long ass day.
Well, got a lot of long days coming up, everybody. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.